Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And today and today only, no, probably next week too. I'll give you the results next week. But today, free advertising of the week goes to... Come on, Bill.
Me.
Alex. Alex, have you not been keeping up with what we do in our free time?
Yes, we knocked out a tooth or something.
And twice.
You did it in honor of the hockey team,
yes,
right?
Okay. Yes, I lost a tooth twice in the same week. Got put on, went off, put on, got
actually,
off.
Actually, I knocked it off, but we don't want to go
well,
there.
It's a fake tooth that I had fixed in 2011, okay. So we'll go back to that. But yes, while all that buffoonery was going on, went home and discovered we had no hot water. So 10 days ago, the hot water went out. And American Home Shield, boo. They do not get free advertising in the
week. Well, something funny that happened to me this week is one of the engine coils went out, fixed it, parked the car, then the battery died.
I thought you were going to say someone stole it.
No.
That's a much better story.
So two things, right? Yeah.
Yeah. See? It was that kind of deal. So the hot water heater goes out, and the American Home Shield's like, well, you know, might be a month or whatever. I'm like, no, that won't work. So Robert... at Hot Water Plumbing Hero. That's the name of their company. And I'm like, he shows up and on the side of the thing, it says Hot Water Plumbing Hero. And I'm thinking, yes, yes,
that's
all that.
Exactly what I'm looking
that's
for.
Totally what I'm looking for. And they have wrangled with American Home Shield, gotten them to let them get a hot water heater here at Pace Plumbing Supply. And he's coming over tomorrow. Yes. So Hot Water Plumbing Hero gets... two thumbs up. Actually, four if you count Bill's. And then we can stop showering at the clubhouse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really fun.
Get that fixed. We'll have free showers for everyone.
We'll no longer have to drive around with a towel and a bar of soap.
You might not want to say that on the air.
People might start
showing up.
Just kidding.
It's happening here at KCNR. All right. So there you go. That's what we've been doing for fun. And... oh, my gosh. Okay, so the other thing I have to promote is also, well, that was like just fun news. Bad news for us, fun for everyone else. Bad news for everyone, however, is what we have posted at gascrisis.org. We have a gas crisis tab on the We the People radio website, but I made them their own domain so people could get there quickly. So gascrisis.org, if you have not looked at that, honestly, yeah, just posted a thing this morning. And PBF, who handles, PBF Energy handles some large energy companies. They just wrote a letter to the California Air Resources Board on the 28th of February. Today is the 1st of March. So really, really, really recent. And I've been sitting on it until I was okay to post it. Basically warning the California Air Resources Board that if they continued to charge these insane cap and trade fees on the companies producing here in the state of California, that they would leave. You know, not exactly shocking. So for those people who are thinking, well, you know, that might not be that big of a deal. Oh, hold on. They supply 50% of the demand. This is just their two refineries they control. 50% of the demand for Sacramento International and Oakland San Francisco Bay airports, 40% for San Francisco and San Jose International airports, and 30% for LAX. 33% of California's in-state production of gasoline, 23% of the California demand, and 30% of the Bay Area, and 20% of California. That's gasoline. Move to marine fuel, 50% of the ultra-low sulfur marine diesel to ships calling at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. So you might not be in California, and you're thinking, well, who cares about them? Mm-hmm. Idiots. Look at them. They've imploded their world again. Well, you know, if ships are not coming into the ports of Long Beach and Los Angeles, they're not putting things on trucks to bring to a lot of other people on the West Coast.
And if they can't get jet fuel at the major airports, they're not going to come here.
Well, you also can't get to, like, most people don't fly from New York to Hawaii. I don't think there is a direct flight. You stop in San Francisco or somewhere. So, and then we haven't even touched all the military implications with everything going on. But I do not – the thing that I woke up with today was just, you know what? The Democrats will get out of this and be able to fob it off on Iran, the Trump thing, blah, 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 blah. They will try to slip the noose on this, and they 100% caused it. The California legislature – that has a Democrat supermajority have squeezed these oil and gas companies. Right now, Tom Steyer is running for governor. I think he's pretending to be an independent, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, not Republican, which is fine. Not like all Republicans are perfect, but at this particular point in time, we might want to take a hard look at that. So Steyer is running, and he held oil companies. He beat Big Oil.
Yeah, he beat him all right.
I'm like, oh, he beat Big Oil. Well, look what's happening. So as you're watching your gas prices go up, we also provide 80-some percent of the fuel to Nevada. So don't relocate there to avoid this, and also to Phoenix. So it's a big deal. Gascrisis.org has all of this information. Don't believe us. Go read. Go listen. You've got choices. I've got a bunch of video up there. We have the three guys that we've been talking to. So we have a professor at USC who follows all this at the global level. We have Assemblyman Stan Ellis who runs who's run multiple companies in the oil industry down there in Kern County. Also has a quantum physics lab and some other stuff. So he's a really good scientist, as well as a member of the California Assembly. Mike Ariza, who used to run the refinery there at Vallejo for like 13 years and was in that industry for a very long time. So the three of those guys have been working together to kind of sound the alarm from all the vantage points they have. We'll have them on for part five next week if all goes well. And along with Katie Grimes, who is the writer for the California Globe, who blew the PBF energy company letter out today in a post for the California Globe. Again, I've got that story on there as well as the original letter. So please go get smart and send this to other people, and so we make sure we know who's responsible for this, and we're not being held by, you know, international affairs. This is something that was created right here at home, but it's not going to be fixable for long. We've got to get with it.
Yeah, they got to get on top of it, or it's going to hit crisis mode.
Well, we're kind of in crisis mode, but
yeah. Well, I haven't hit the shortage part yet. I mean, the prices are going up, but that's only half the problem. I mean, when we can't produce it and then all of a sudden we can't ship it in,
yep,
prices go up and there's going to be huge shortages. So,
well, can you imagine? There's no cap and trade fees on the guys getting the oil from India coming in on Chinese.
They don't have to pay it.
Coming in on Chinese and Russian ships. And the guys here in California are shouldering these massive, massive regulatory burdens that are not actually making us safer. They're not making our product cleaner. 1%, that was the California blend was 1% cleaner. So for that, really,
I noticed the difference.
We want to blow up the world.
Yeah.
So there are no pipelines into California. So it isn't just like, oh, we'll just source it from somewhere else. Nope. And, I really do hope you go take a look at that because, they will disabuse you of the notion that we're going to bring it in by rail. We're just going to get more trucks. We'll bring in ships from Texas. No, no, and no. So. Anyway, it's worth a read, a listen, or a look, however you want to do it. It's all free, and you can find it at gascrisis.org, a little service we provide on the side, promoting disaster wherever we go, promoting bad news. Change the website, badnews.com, probably already taken. Oh, my God. So, more bad news, but kind of an interesting twist. Let's move to the interesting twist. We have our guest, Philip Drum, who is a farm D. He can tell you what a farm D means. Grew up in the central San Joaquin Valley of California. Received his doctorate from the University of California. San Francisco School of Pharmacy in 1986. Did hospital pharmacy residency in Chicago, Illinois. Probably when things were, I don't know, maybe safer. At least the pizza was good. After his residency, he worked at an oncology clinical pharmacist as an oncology clinical pharmacist in hospitals and later became a clinical coordinator and manager of pharmacy practice in hospitals. Also been a pharmacology instructor. Say that twice. Residency program director and special pharmacy consultant. So bottom line is he's a pharmacy guy. And we have had him on before. The first show was quite a while ago, actually. I'd have to look back. But it was 2017. But following a family tragedy involving his sister over 13 years ago, he has been an educator on marijuana and an advocate for safe roads, both within the state and across the U.S. Dr. Drum has performed marijuana driving research, provided national, state, and local presentations, including training to drug recognition experts, at the DRE law enforcement officers. Dr. Drum was assigned by the California governor to a 3-year state impaired, I guess if you say it fast, right, a state impaired driving task force, because the state is impaired.
Impaired driving task
force. It's an impaired driving task force, but it is state impaired, right? And participated in multiple safe driving bills and was accepted as the only pharmacist to present to a U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency hearing to assess marijuana's status as a controlled substance. And that's kind of where we go today, because with the rescheduling, there will be some big-time impacts. He has sent me a bunch of links and videos that I've posted on the site for today, March 1st, 2026. So, Dr. Phil Drum, what does a PharmD mean? Let's not bury the lead there. What does that mean exactly?
Well, I have a doctorate in pharmacy. Nice to see you folks again. I see this is, sounds like it's my fifth time with you guys.
I know. It's like website. Really kind of repetitive. So instead of an MD, you're a PharmD. They don't just call you a P.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I took many classes with medical students when I was a pharmacy student. And we worked hand in hand with the medical staff when we were going through our program.
Nice. Well,
interesting.
We have had a lot of conversations about this, but with the rescheduling thing, you and I were chatting in the, I think I was sitting in the Costco parking lot, and you were telling me how this was going to affect all of the dope stores out there, and I thought, yeah, we should tell everybody about this.
Yeah, I think the marijuana industry needs to really look at what they're wishing for. I think actually this is probably the cartels have really been pushing this because they want to use our banks. And to be able to use our banks, there's a little sticking point for them right now, even though Chuck Schumer et al. Have been trying to push their Safe Banking Act for marijuana for many years through Congress. It's always been voted down, in which they were going to allow the marijuana industry to use the banks. And as we know, the marijuana industry is actually international drug cartels. Even the local little guys that thought they were going to become millionaires have all been run out of business by these big cartels. And so, and as we've seen also in the past, these drug dens, as I prefer to call them, because I find it highly offensive that they call them dispensaries.
Yeah.
To me, a dispensary is actually a pharmacy. And these are by no means pharmacies or pharmaceutical products. These are illicit drugs that have been voted on by a naive public to be sold to them. And we've also caught them, again, many years ago here in California. They're selling more than just marijuana in these shops, cocaine, the stimulants that they need as a result of now being on the sedative product of marijuana. So yeah, so by converting marijuana from a CS1 substance to a CS3 substance, they are now allowed to use the U.S. banks. And as you may have heard in the past, you know, they whine and complain that, oh, we can only deal in dollars. Well, you know, we've caught them using PayPal and other, even credit cards, the banking industry. But the banks are required to maintain their FDIC insurance from the federal government to report any suspicious activities, including drugs that are dealing, you know, drug dealers that are dealing with CS1 substances. So they are mandated to, in order to keep their FDIC insurance, to create what's called suspicious activity reports on those accounts that are dealing with illicit substances.
And so all everything that goes on in there is suspicious.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And so this report that gets filled out by the local banks when they bring in their monies gets sent to the U.S. Department of Treasury. And so the U.S. Department of Treasury then has a nice list of these account numbers and who's on them. And, you know, it's kind of well known that the FDA, well, the DEA and Department of Justice kind of cruise over to the Treasury Department every once in a while and start looking into those suspicious activity reports that come in from the banks. And that's where they start then finding out about the cocaine and other substances as well that are going on, because now they have accounts and they have people to go and investigate. And, of course, those drug cartels do not like that. And so if this gets made into a CS3 substance, there's no more suspicious activity reports going to the banks. And therefore, the DEA and DOJ kind of lose one of their little tricks that they could use to start identifying who's dealing with illicit substances. So that's who I think is really behind this, because they haven't been able to get over this hurdle of, well, we're just going to deem marijuana not a CS1 substance when it comes to banking. They tried that law. They tried to create those laws, and they never got approved. So now what they need to do is they're going to change it from a CS1 to a CS3.
And that's controlled substance for people who don't deal in this kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah, so yeah, let me just walk through that if you want me. So there's five levels of controlled substances.
Oh, wait.
And
okay, I'm a crazy person. We have to take a really quick break. Sorry.
Sure.
Don't mean to preempt that, but we should, yeah, let's keep all that together. But that it is confusing because people see, oh, it's been reclassified, and everybody's like, what does that mean? It's already legal. So then they glaze over, don't look, and it does behoove everyone to pay attention on this particular topic. So I'm going to take a quick break. We've thrown a lot at you here at the beginning, so I hope you're reading about the gas thing. I want you to learn about the marijuana thing. We just want you to learn. That's the whole point. And you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body.
Justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line.
When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll all meet back at the local saloon.
We'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I never get tired of that song. It's Dr. Peter Vincent Pry's favorite song, we learned. Pretty funny. All right.
Hey,
so,
really quick, Phil, yes. Has anyone ever pointed out that your last name is Drum and that's the name brand of rolling papers?
Really?
Yeah, there's a
lucky
Drum.
Name.
Yeah.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding.
Wow, what are the odds of that? Huh. Well, there you go.
I'm glad my last name's not Zigzag.
Why? Because you'd be last at kickball?
Yeah.
Well, I guess if you want to be undercover, you could use your last name then.
There you go.
No, not you. Not Zigzag Boy. I'm talking about Drum. All right. Phil Drum.
So what I'd like to
go back to
yeah,
the
what I'd like to
CS let's go,
let's,
thing.
Let's, let's do a little bit of a history lesson here. Is to kind of, and again, the marijuana industry always wants to tell you, oh, you know, we're Madison and we've been around since prehistoric times. Well, you know, in the 19th century, so we're talking the 1800s here, the U.S. and British pharmacopoeias listed cannabis as then a perceived agent that could be used for pain relief and sedation. But by the 20th century, in the 1900s, cannabis was removed without a contest from both the British in 1932 and the U.S. in 1942 from the pharmacopoeias because it had not gained widespread use as a remedy. Its slow onset and inconsistent potency, and, of course, concerns over abuse potential. And so the cannabis prohibition then started actually just a little before 1942, before the Pharmacopeia acted and took it out as a pharmaceutical agent. And it kind of rose incrementally, first by states, followed by the passage of the Federal Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, and then subsequently by the Controlled Substance Act in 1970, which was approved. It was part of the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act in 1970 and signed into law by President Richard Nixon at that time. And what it did is it places psychoactive drugs with abuse potential into one of five schedules or controlled substance schedules. So CS1, which is currently where marijuana resides, is a CS1 substance is classified that applies to drugs that have no legitimate medical use. I'll repeat that. No legitimate medical use. Has a high potential for abuse and lacks safe use even under medical supervision. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't study it, though. And we have been studying cannabis or marijuana products for a long time and still continue to do so. So what I'd like to do is, let me first explain the five levels of controlled substance. So CS1, as I just mentioned, that's what it is. They have no legitimate medical use, high potential for abuse, and lack safe use under medical supervision. Typically, these drugs also go through withdrawal symptoms, both psychological and physical withdrawals, which marijuana does do. Okay? Even though they want to lie and say it doesn't, it does. And so, CS2 substances, then, the major difference between a CS1 and a CS2 is that a CS2 has medical supervision, but it also has legitimate medical use. Okay?
So that would be like what?
So what are CS2 substances? Well, things like morphine, methadone, Vicodin actually got moved into a CS2 due to its abuse potential, that it was being abused a lot. So CS2 fentanyl. So these are drugs that we commonly use in medicine. They have a legitimate medical use. And again, they're still a risk for abuse and going through withdrawals, as we know. And so that's what makes a CS2, those that have a legitimate medical indication. Okay?
Okay.
So that's a two. So what's a CS3, which is where the proposal is we're going to move marijuana, jumping it all the way from a one to a three, saying that, oh, you know, it's much safer than morphine, and oh, so much safer than fentanyl. And it has to do with that. It has to do with the abuse potential being slightly lower than a CS2. And the risk for death and things like that. So again, yes, those opiates stop you from breathing. But the marijuana, we also know, have chronic long-term effects as well, which are not safe. And so again, so they want to put it into a CS3. So what is a CS3? Tylenol with codeine, for example, is a CS3. Anabolic steroids are a CS3. Okay. And so these are drugs, in fact, that original Controlled Substance Act has had 14 amendments since it was first came out in 1970. One of those amendments was to throw the anabolic steroids into the controlled substance status. Prior, I think it was in the 1990s, you know, anabolic steroids were not deemed a controlled substance, but due to the excessive misuse of them, in 1990, the Anabolic Steroids Control Act came out. And so we started then having to keep these separate. So that's a CS3. CS4 then are your sedative agents. So, things like your benzodiazepines, barbiturates. So things like Ativan, lorazepam, Valium, chlordiazepoxide. Epoxide. I mean, these are drugs that are sedatives, make you go to sleep, right? These are also the date rape drugs. So those are your CS4 substances. CS5 substances tend to be drugs that have very low amounts of opiate-like products and are in formulations that do not absorb as much of the drug as it does in another means, like an injectable of morphine, whereas a CS5 of morphine in a suppository would be a CS5 because it's not an injectable formulation like the CS2 morphine is. You follow me? So, So those are the CS5s. And so as a pharmacist, we have to have very strict controls over what comes in and what goes out of our pharmacies of these controlled substances. They're monitored. We receive a licensure by the Drug Enforcement Agency, the DEA, grants us the ability then to maintain these controlled substances to protect society. Okay? And so that's why these drugs are kept in a pharmacy. Again, the pharmacy has the DEA license, not a pharmacist. So I don't have a DEA license, but the pharmacy I work in does. Okay? And if there's some shenanigans going on in the pharmacy, the DEA can pull the license then for the pharmacy. And that could be the pharmacy at the hospital, the pharmacy, you know, Walgreens, whatever. If you're not adequately controlling and keeping the access of those controlled substances under strict controls in which we keep them in the separate areas, we also have to log in what comes in and what goes out. Okay? So those are your five levels of controlled substances. You guys have any questions about that?
No, that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. But they throw that around like everybody's going to go look it up. And, you know, you realize nobody is. So this would be, so the idea that...
Let me just reiterate, C's 2 through 5 have medical conditions. And as you're going down or up on the number, however you want to look at it, going from a 2 to a 3, there's less abuse potential. There's even less going from a 3 to a 4 with that drug. And then the 5 has the least amount of abuse potential and the potential to have withdrawal symptoms. Got me?
Yep. So this would be like... I mean, obviously, the problem that you see immediately if you move marijuana into a 3, and I know you're going to get to this, but bottom line is, who's deciding how much you get? I mean, you don't go to some dope store in town and go get Tylenol with codeine. I mean, you get a prescription.
Yeah.
It has actual dosages on it, numbers. And
you
go get it someplace where people take care of that stuff and it isn't on the corner at the corner store.
That's right. And so being as a CS1 substance, the only time I would ever touch a CS1 substance, and as I mentioned, we do study CS1 substances, would be in an investigational protocol. And again, those are even higher regulated as to how we get them. And we get them usually from the drug company in coordination with usually National Institute of Health. In which we're overseeing those products and evaluating them and assessing them before they get approved by the FDA, okay? So the states claim that they're doing this now for the marijuana industry. And again, it's a CS1 substance. We don't handle CS1 substances typically unless, again, it's in an investigational protocol. Marijuana is not an investigational protocol in these states, so they get to be sold in drug dens. And, you know, they claim that they have oversight and they claim seed to sell, which isn't really working anywhere that I'm aware of. So, you know, what's going into those facilities and going out isn't being monitored as a CS1 substance per se. Now, the controlled substances that I handle in a pharmacy are. And as we know, with what happened with the opiates and, things like OxyContin, being approved by the FDA back in the 1990s, which was an absolute disaster and should have been seen by the scientists and refused. But, of course, back then, we started expediting approvals of drugs, and that's how it slid through. because prior to oxycodone being available, it was oxycodone was already in Percocet and Percodan. Percocet had acetaminophen with it. Percodan had aspirin with it. And so those products were controlled substances that we then dispensed because they were combination products, and all the physicians know you can't give somebody too much Tylenol in a day. And so that limited how much oxycodone they could get. And the same was with aspirin. And that's why back in the 1970s and 60s, when they approved Percocet and Percodan, they put them together to say, okay, look, we find oxycodone highly addictive. And the only way we're going to let it get out into the market is that we have to put it together with substances that we know are going to cause damage should the person take too much of it. Okay? And so that's why they then did that back then, and then they forgot about that in the 90s when Purdue Frederick came through and said, hey, we want to make this new product, oxycodone, by itself. And so now all of a sudden, there was no more oversight and limitation as to how much oxycodone. They said, it's just like morphine. Well, again, it became widely used, and there were a lot of deaths, right, as we know. And so as a result of that, one of the ways to try and control this is the states previously had what we called a triplicate form here in California. Other states had different ways, but we had a triplicate form for CS2 substances. And for those to be dispensed, it had to be written on a triplicate by the provider. So the physician would write it out and keep a copy and give two copies to the patient. The patient then would come to the pharmacy, give us the two copies. We would keep one, and we would send one to the state board of pharmacy. We'd send it in and say, here you go, I dispensed this today. And they were supposed to be keeping records of these patients that were receiving these controlled substances. Well, you know, I've had experience in this game, and which people aren't, you know, necessarily too well truth-telling to you when you ask them, are you receiving this from anywhere else, any other pain medication? Oh, no. Well, again, we learned the horror stories of the doctor shopping. And so they would get one triplicate prescription from one doctor and go to the Walgreens, for example. And then they would go and get another triplicate prescription and go to the Rexall. And then they would the next day go and get another triplicate from another doctor and go to Pharmacy Y. And so all of those, the pharmacies were sending those that third copy to the state, and the state should have been telling us, hey, this guy just got the same drug 2 days ago and 1 day ago from somewhere else. But they were being overwhelmed with all these triplicates coming in, and they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. They also, when you turned around and said, you know, I'm suspicious that this guy is getting multiple opiates from somewhere else, and we could ask the state, hey, here's John Smith, here's his birth date, could you tell me if he's getting controlled substances from somewhere else? Guess how long that took to get that information back from the state?
2 weeks.
If you're lucky, it was more like 90 days, 3 months.
Meanwhile, wow. The guy's standing in line at your pharmacy. Well, I don't know. I think I've done that at CVS.
Oh. Yeah, so I don't think we could hold the drug for 90 days before dispensing it.
Probably
so
not.
That system obviously wasn't working. And that became blatantly obvious when actually, the guy was local here by me in San Ramon. His kids got killed by a nanny of a local TV person. She was driving down the road, and she had been doctor shopping, and it came out that, hey, we've got this system here in the state that isn't working, and doctor shopping is going on all over the place. And this guy happened to be an executive at a computer company. And he worked with state legislators and said, look, we're going to now change this into a computerized system in which the pharmacy is going to send it electronically to the state. So that way, as well as, you know, not only do we send it in, but we can now look and see it live. And so I could go in there when I'm going to dispense this and look up John Smith with this birth date and find out, yeah, he just got this same Percocet, you know, 100 of them yesterday, and 200 of them the day before. Now I could see that live. because I now have to go into the system. So a lot of states pick this up. You call prescription drug monitoring programs. With that, it still became a little problematic. You need to make sure that your states are sharing their data, because if you live in South Shore Lake Tahoe, you could be in California at one pharmacy and walk down this, you know, block, and now you're in Nevada, right? And so the prescription drug monitoring programs needed a little tweaking, because you can imagine if you're on the East Coast and going from state to state to state, which people were doing, the prescription drug monitoring programs were not working that well, because they just got their prescriptions filled in three different states on three different days. But now they start sharing the data, so that's helpful. So now let's talk about the controlled substances going in that.
Hold that thought. And sure. let's take a quick break again, and then we are going to come back with our guest, Phil Drum. He is a doctor of pharmacy, so you're going to get all your good drug information here.
The real information.
Yeah, actual information. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I think I accidentally smoked pesticides or PCP the year before I left for college. Everything looked like a deep-fried meme. I think somebody laced my weed. I didn't do it to myself, I promise. My mama warned me about little pills and older men's strawberry fields that never end. She did her time. Somehow escaped that clawing hand, a strength I'll never understand. That iron grip can get so tight.
Across the Jersey line, so they hopped into a stolen car, took Highway 99.
Well, there you go. Two fun songs. So you had Moselle. I don't think she sings any other stuff, but I always thought that song was, I mean, it's actually really easy to understand. You got to like it. It's called Pesticides. And then that was the Traveling Wilburys, too. So, random music for you today on Sunday. All right, Dr. Drum, back to the story.
Okay, so the story we're working on is the prescription drug monitoring programs. And again, it kind of depends on the states, but most states do have the pharmacies report in the sales of the CS2s through 4s. Some do the 5s as well. So anytime you're selling any of these controlled substances, you have to provide the patient's name to the state, the amount you provided, the provider's name, their DEA license, their location, the date you did it. You know, and the medication that you dispensed, how much, all that has to be sent into the state. So the state now has this information. Now, again, before I dispense it, I need to check that registry to see, to make sure that they're not doctor shopping and going to multiple places. That's the whole purpose of this. And so I look up that Joe Smith and with that birth date and find out, nope, he's not getting anywhere else and I can fill it. But let's say I look in there and he did just get it a week ago, from somebody else. That now tells me that this guy's doctor shopping, and I would tell the person, no, you know, I cannot fill this. You're getting this filled in other places. And that kind of puts me in the bad position of being the pharma cop, doesn't it?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not too fun. Really, who should have had to check it is the MD that wrote it. But unfortunately, the state only says he has to do it for the first time he writes it. So he doesn't have to check it. I think we should have a bounty that the pharmacist gets. That if the doctors are willy-nilly writing and not looking in that, even if it's the first time or second or third time, they should have to look every time to make sure that this person is not doctor shopping. But unfortunately, they only say they have to look the first time, assuming that everybody's good and looks at it the first time. They would obviously catch the second provider, so long as the second provider looked, right? But if he doesn't, then it comes to the pharmacist, and we get in trouble if we dispense it, having seen two guys prescribing it within the last period of time in which that would be too much drug being received. So anyway, that goes to the state. We can now see it live, and the state now can see who the doctors are that are prescribing a lot of to patients, because now they're going to see that doctor who's prescribing this medication. And they have kind of gone after some doctors saying, hey, you're kind of prescribing a lot of opiates, right? And so they could see that now, or whatever, any controlled substance. They can now see that. And they have gone after doctors. They have to be careful, obviously, as to who the types of patients they're seeing, right? So if they're seeing cancer patients, then they're going to need higher amounts of opiates, right? So they got to be careful when they do that, when they go after physicians. But they have been catching physicians that are over prescribing, because again, if they're different patients, the pharmacist isn't going to catch that, but the state will, right? And so that's an interesting fact. So now this is being done, as I mentioned, for 2s through 4s or 2s through 5s, depending on the state, is going into the state. And so marijuana is a CS1. The drug dens aren't sending in the information at this time.
No.
Nor do they have to, because it doesn't fit the criteria of a prescription drug monitoring program.
No, because it's the same as heroin or other stuff you buy on the street.
That's right. And so, therefore, they're exempt from that right now. But when it becomes a CS3, that means they have to be part of the plan. They have to be part of the system.
That's right? Going to mess things up.
Oopsie.
And so either A, the cannabis has to come into the pharmacy, and the drug dens get shut down, or B, the drug dens get to go in and look and see the marijuana, and have to put in the marijuana to the state, and now those guys' medication use of their cannabis is now being documented.
But the thing, the wheels fall off on that, because you have some pothead who's telling you this is your, quote, dosage. These aren't people who are licensed in anything. None of this stuff is actually measured correctly. How's that going to work?
The state now is going to see that this guy is getting how much he's getting. And just like they're kind of deciding how much is too much opiates, they're going to get to decide how much is too much marijuana.
Right, but how do you know how do you know what the THC level is? They're not even really testing any of that. What about, the pesticides?
The marijuana industry claims that that's being done. Again, the Food and Drug Administration is responsible for doing that for real pharmaceuticals. The state's responsible for doing that for the state.
I feel better already.
Are doing that, although, as we know, we've caught the agencies that are doing the testing, creating fraudulent reports, right? We've seen that even with the world-renowned experts here in the Bay Area that they claim to be, that they were shut down for several months by fraudulently creating reports or not looking for all the substances the state mandated that they look for, things like pesticides and heavy metals, and that they didn't contain fungus or bacteria. They weren't looking for those things. They've been caught, but that's what, people are relying on, is that this is really real, and we know that it's not. And so now you're going to also get to find out who the doctors are that are recommending this, right? And so from the data that we've kind of already seen, we know that it's about 2%. Of the registered providers in the United States are recommending marijuana at this time, 2%. And so, they're recommending vast amount of differences in the amount of, what they're allowing the person to get.
But what about states that have legalized recreational use?
Yeah, what about recreational?
Nobody's recommending Squeak except for the purple-haired kid behind the counter.
Yeah, and the concerning thing is then it'll be a CS3 substance, won't it? So now it's going to have to go into the state.
Even if it's recreational.
Of course, because it's the drug. That's
going to be a problem.
Ruh-roh.
So there's a little bit. See, that's what I'm saying. They kind of didn't think this all the way through. It's not a CS3 substance if it's used for medicine, and it's not a CS substance if it's being used recreationally. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
The substance is the substance. And I'll ask you, where can you go get Tylenol with codeine? Can you get that at a gas station?
No.
Can you vape it?
Can you get anabolic steroids, you know, at the local grocery store?
Nope.
They would pump you up.
And so now all of a sudden we're kind of running into that problem of, oops, now we got a CS3 substance and we got to adhere to the prescription drug monitoring program. So it's either that or maybe the pharmacist just say, you know, I'm not going to report anything because if you're not going to make this CS3 substance report, why do I have to report any CS3 substances?
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so maybe I'm not going to be considering, you know, using that program anymore and try and come after me because I'm going to come around and say that you're not letting the drug dens get involved in this too. And you're not having to count and miss. If you're missing a tablet, we have to let the state know that are counts off. So if they're missing a bud, a vape pen, a little bit of extra goop that they call shatter or wax,
right,
they have to keep an account for how much is coming in.
Oh, no, who's counting the gummy bears?
Yeah, and so if those counts are off, we're going to have a little bit of a problem. So here's one other thing that they get to think of. Remember how I warned you that we've already caught the drug den selling more than marijuana?
Right.
Well, would you like them to know, because, okay, we're going to give them access, and they're going to be able to go in and look in the prescription drug monitoring program and find out what other controlled substances you're on. They're going to get to know what morphine, how much Percocet, how much Ativan, how much Vicodin that you're getting. And maybe they're going to have something behind the counter that they could sell at a little bit cheaper price.
Oh.
Get it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because now they're going to know the other controlled substances.
Darn it. I am not a good drug user. I was thinking there would be a trap door, and then if you're using all sorts of other things, poof, down the trap door.
So the dispensaries will have access to that information.
Bingo.
Oh, man, that is a problem.
Okay.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think they
definitely have not thought that through.
Yeah. So these are some of the issues that are coming up that they have to keep count of all those buds and.
But I mean,
gummy
even just the logistics of, they cannot tell you the dosage because they don't measure it, the THC levels, all that stuff. It can't be dispensed like a pharmaceutical.
Well, it has to be. They're going to have to tell us how many buds the guy got.
Right, but are they big ones, little ones? I mean, are they from Humboldt County?
How many
do they grow them?
They're going to have to say this is 20% because it says that, you know, they claim, oh, this one's 20%, and so I gave 2 grams of this 20% THC product, and I gave, you know, 10 bags of 100 gummy bears, each with 5 milligrams per gummy bear. You know, they have to report this, and they have to keep track of it, because now they're a CS3 substance, and the states are going to require that they keep track of this. And so I think they didn't think that part through. I'd also like to go into talking about the lie that they've perpetrated as to why we have to make this a CS3 substance, because we can't study it. Right? That's the line that comes out, just like many other lies that we've heard. This is the one that we heard the president repeat. And so let me be able to have some time. I know we're probably coming up on a break now, but I want to go into that. Let's talk about that lie that's being repeated as to how many studies have there been for marijuana cannabis as a CS1 substance. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, gosh, look at you. You're better at the time than I am. Alex is like, hey, can he host the show? All right. And I found out, I got a little clip from the meeting where they're going to decide how they do this. We're going to play it for you here as we go out. We eavesdropped on them. You are listening to We the People. We're going to be back with Philip Drum. You're listening to We the People. We the People Radio.
.us.
Because I got high.
Go to the next.
I was gonna go to work, but then I got high. Ooh, I just got a new promotion, but I got high. Now I'm selling dope, and I know why. Because I got high. I was gonna go to court. Before I got high, ooh, I was gonna pay my child support.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the second half of We the People Radio here on March 1st, 2026. It's been a trying year thus far, to put it mildly. Free advertisement of the week goes out to Hot Water Plumbing Hero. Yay. They're coming to our house tomorrow so we can have hot water after 10 days. I miss hot water.
It's kind of important.
I know. Yeah, there's nothing like washing your face with cold water at night before you go to bed.
Brr.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. None of them are good. Not relaxing. Anyway, so we're gonna hang out with them tomorrow and get our hot water back. Yay. Getting a new tooth on Wednesday. It's a red letter week. I'll let you know next Sunday how this all works out for us. We got our internet back Friday, though. No, Saturday. Got the internet back Saturday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, mostly, you know, I'd invite you over, but pretty much we don't have anything. So.
Yeah, I'm currently without internet at the place I live because I'm moving, and it's like,
yeah,
I have to sit here at the station and get my work done.
Yeah, or use your phone as a hotspot and all that, and that's real fun and everything, but not really. First world problems, I know, but still it's a pain. It just jams you up. So today we are talking about the rescheduling implications of marijuana, but the better part is the implications for how it is currently handled, especially in states that have legalized either for, you know, fake medicine or for recreation, and what that would do if they reschedule it, because as we learned in the first hour, which I hope you go back and listen to if you missed it, if they do that, it'll be the same as Tylenol with codeine. Well, sorry, can't go to a dope store and buy Tylenol with codeine. Whoops.
Yep.
So
depends on which dope store.
Yeah, we'll talk after the show.
Yeah, I guess it does. So anyway, our guest is Philip Drum. He is a PharmD, which is a doctor of pharmacy, as we learned. And his bio is on there. We've done a bunch of shows with him. And I hope you go and really get smart about this. We do have a tab at wethepeopleradio.us. We have a tab for pot. Pretty straightforward. Made it as obvious as possible. And there is a ton of information on there. So if you want to find out about the pesticides, oh, please go on there. I've got pictures. I took myself of what's going on in these giant marijuana grows. If you want to look at the crime, go look at that. If you want to look at how they torture animals in the grows and cook them, yep, got photos of that. So if you don't care about pot, you don't care that people are high, you don't care about this, you don't care about that, how about people who eat dogs? You might care about that. That's happening right here in this country, an hour and a half of north of where I'm sitting right now. Not good. Mm-hmm. Not good. None of this stuff is good. It's not helping. Oh, I also updated the killers using pot list, by the way. Gosh, I forgot to promote that last week. I did update that. Yeah. It's a massive list. So, the whole idea that no one ever dies from marijuana use. This is a compendium of death and injury related to marijuana. So it's a condensed list of stabbers, mass murderers, and child killers. So we've got the stabbers, the mass murderers, the child killers, and then the links to all the articles proving that.
Well, that's been in the news last few weeks, the psychosis and a lot of the mental effects they're finding now. Well, I think they knew all along, but it's coming out.
It's harder to bury.
Yeah, it's harder to bury. I mean, it's coming out.
Well, you'd be surprised. You'd actually be surprised about how hard it is, how easy it is to bury it. Let me just give you a few examples. You guys are wisely pointing out, again, yeah, schizophrenia, depression.
Right.
Suicidal ideation and actually committing suicide. Marijuana is the number one substance of successfully fatally accomplished suicides in the state of Colorado. It's marijuana.
Still like a date rape drug too, right?
Yeah, it's not nice. But the surprise is, get ready for this, coroners in Southern California are refusing to test the dead for THC. And I have that in writing.
Wow.
So how nice is that, that it's ubiquitous and we're not going to test for it? So, you know, Rob Reiner can get stabbed to death by his son, who was a known marijuana user, and we're not going to test him. We're not going to test his hair to see if he had been using marijuana in the 90 days prior to the murder. We're not going to do that because it's so ubiquitous. And wow. But other states are. But some states aren't, and we've got I know Rhode Island is another one, that they are refusing to test and or provide us with the data when we've asked for, you know, toxicology reports, little fun things like that. Or they don't test for THC. A good one is a name that you may be familiar with, Thomas Crooks, who took a shot at Donald Trump when he was running, last time in July of 2024, his toxicology report came back negative for everything, but they didn't test for THC.
Hmm.
How about that?
Gosh, yeah. That's handy.
That's just an oversight.
Yeah. Yeah. But the fun part was they did admit that he had large amounts of lead, antimony, and selenium. And as a pharmacist, I know that marijuana is used as a phytoremediant to suck out of ground lead and other heavy metals. And so when you sell that product, that's one of the things they're supposed to be testing for, is to make sure that the product that they're selling you doesn't have high amounts of lead, because we know marijuana will suck it out of the ground. And there's papers out there that tell you that chronic users of cannabis have high lead levels. Comes up in your urine. And so Thomas Crooks had high lead levels. But they didn't test for THC, despite Allegheny County quoting that, we test for drugs and fentanyl, cocaine, and THC are three of our top drugs that we find. They didn't test for it in Thomas Crooks.
Well, he was probably just eating lead paint chips off his front porch.
Yeah, when he was a child.
20 years old, and was probably licking lead paint. Every day.
I'm sure that's what it was.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So let's go into the big lie about I'll send you guys copies of those reports to be able to put on your pop page. Oh, I also wanted to let you know, make sure that you tap on the more section on the top of your header to be able to see then pot as an option and then see those other options that you mentioned.
I'm attaching it at the bottom of the page for today, too. I put the stabbers on there.
And I saw the one I took a peek at it before I came on today. I think you only had through 2021. We've had a few years since 2021. I think you got a lot more.
I know. I've been waiting for a more comprehensive list. Nobody's really. It's coming out little by little by little, but it's just a time problem to go. I do have the names. I just don't have. We have Brian Koberger, the. What do you call it? The Idaho guy.
Idaho.
Yep.
Yeah. Four students in Idaho was a marijuana user. Yeah. In high school. We don't have the data on his recent use, but
Yeah.
You know, we do know that he was a heroin user, and people don't fall out of bed and start using heroin. So we did have the data that he was a chronic marijuana user before he went into heroin. But he did supposedly then, you know, stop his heroin use. But did he stop his THC use? I don't know. So let's kind of go into that issue about, though, the big lie that, oh, it's a CS1 substance, and we got to get it out of CS1 because you can't study it.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Right, they do always say
sorry.
That.
Sorry. Let's tell the truth here. Okay, so we go to the website called reporter.nih.gov. Okay, NIH as in national, I as in institution, H as in health. So reporter.nih.gov. And you can do your own search. I did. And I searched and did a search for marijuana or cannabis. And what this does is it's a website. It's a database of the National Institute of Health funded research projects, contracts, and publications for all fiscal years. I looked at it since 1985. It goes back 1985 to now. And again, you find that at reporter.nih.gov. And it lists of the projects and contracts and publications funded by other governments are not there, or pharmaceutical industry is not there. Okay? But these are the ones funded by our government, the National Institute of Health, and various agencies within our federal system. So, for example, Veterans Administration. They also have their own funding, but we also fund the VA through this as well with research projects. So when I put in marijuana or cannabis and said, I want to see all years since 1985, guess how many projects came up? Remember, it's been a CS1 substance since 1970, so you can't study it. How many studies do you think I found with the heading marijuana or cannabis?
Hmm. Well, you can't study it, so probably none.
How about 11,309?
Yeah.
I did it just this morning. So it's a tad bit higher, and all of those haven't been done, you know, in the last week. This has been going on since 1985. And how much would you guess the U.S. government has funded for these studies?
God.
Oh.
11,000 of them.
Oh, God.
Millions,
wait,
I'm
are these
sure.
studies? Are these studies like the transgender mice type studies? Because that's in the millions every time.
Anything dealing with marijuana or cannabis, if they happen to look, you know, that they're using that substance to perform a study to look for, you know, oh, it works for pain, or oh, it works for my glaucoma, or it decreases my seizures. Again, looking for marijuana or cannabis, 11,309 projects at a cost of?
A zillion dollars?
Drum roll, please. Uh-uh. I'm rolling around. $4.7 billion with a B.
Oh, my
dollars.
God.
To be exact, $4,788,591,215. Okay, so $4.7 billion, but remember...
I can hear my wallet crying.
We can't study it.
We all paid for that, by the way. Let's not let that slide away.
61 VA institutions have been involved in this.
Sure.
VA, as in Long Beach, San Diego, Palo Alto, San Francisco, Puget Sound, Connecticut, Pittsburgh, and Ann Arbor. So again, go to the NIH reporter. Get the truth, not the lies. That we have been studying it. Let me just give you a comparison, and this is what I was going to share with the DEA judge when that lie came up. I was going to say, you know, judge, hey, let's kind of compare it to other real drugs, you know, the ones that have been approved by the FDA, because, you know, you do the studies, you show that it is medicine through the study, and it gets approved by the FDA. That's how it works, right? So let's take a drug called, oh, I don't know, morphine. When I did this report back in November 2024, prior to me being selected to go give talk to the judge about this, there were 9,700. at that time there were over 10,800 cannabis or marijuana, so or marijuana or cannabis. So again, relative, kind of close, 9,700, but the cost difference was $2.8 billion. How about ibuprofen? You guys know ibuprofen, right?
Sure.
1,100 studies.
Wow.
That's $320 million. Okay? And that's FDA approved, right? It's over the counter even. How about penicillin? 2,982 studies at a cost of $1.1 billion. How about omeprazole? The people are having a little GI discomfort and have an ulcer. You get omeprazole, which is now over the counter. It took 300, there were 387 studies at a cost of $85 million. 387 studies, $85 million. How about semaglutide, also known as Ozempic, right? That's a drug in the news, right? Everybody's getting Ozempic now to lose weight. 79 NIH studies. 79.
It
has multiple FDA-approved indications at a cost of $57 million.
Well, it's a good thing. It's a good thing we can't really study it, considering how much money we're spending. Imagine if we could study it.
So
my God.
We spent $4.7 billion and have not one FDA-approved indication for marijuana or cannabis.
After billions.
These other drugs have been studied at much lower costs, much lower numbers, and they have been approved.
Huh.
Kind of following the issue here of what may be the problem?
Yes. It sounds like lying. I have two tremendous songs all set up for lying. We're working on lying today now, again. Hey, and I just want you to know I switched the tabs around on the site, so pot is now sandwiched in between gas crisis and wolves.
Yay!
So we have gas crisis, pot, and then wolves. Then you tap the more button, and you can you can read about the transgender thing, environmental craziness, China, South Africa, Islam, national security. Yep, we got all the hot topics here. We'll be right back here. A couple songs for you on lying. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
You've been talking in your sleep and it's been going on for weeks, and I've been solving puzzle pieces. High time to come to Jesus. You got skeletons in your closet, spitting all over your face. Every little lie stacks so high, can't keep your story straight.
Yes.
Yes, they're very good
that
at it.
That is
too.
Going to be the state anthem here pretty quick. Forgot to do it at the beginning of the hour, but please seriously go look at the gas crisis tab on the website. The fast way to get there is gascrisis.org, because they're going to try to paint this as Donald Trump attacked Iran and
not our gas prices are going up, except they've been going up for weeks.
Yeah, people haven't really noticed, and it's going to look like something that isn't. And bottom line is it has been avoidable, but it's becoming less able to be avoidable if we don't get our act together. So, back to marijuana with Phil Drum.
Price of marijuana is not going to go up, is it?
No, actually, it's been going down because, again, there have been expansive grows, as you all know about up there in Northern California,
and
driving the price down because there's so much of it. And it's leaving the state, which is, of course, illegal, federally illegal. not sure why the federal government isn't blocking that.
Yeah, no kidding.
Again, we've heard that, 60% of the U.S. is coming out of California, marijuana use.
And it would be so easy to do. I mean, just a short campaign, maybe a month, you could clean all that up.
Yeah, but who's enforcing it? Think about it. You've got the Highway Patrol. Well, the governor controls the Highway Patrol. The state police, the Highway Patrol. Then you've got Fish and Game also
controlled by the state.
You have all these different entities, and the state has done an amazing job, especially up north where it has just proliferated. Again, if you'd like to go see pictures, lots of them, and lots of them I took myself. You would not believe the miles and miles and miles and miles of illegal. There's nothing legal there. No home permits, no well permits, all, and no commercial growing allowed.
Now I saw
got miles of greenhouses.
I saw a story out of Southern California where they were touting how the sheriff's department went out and they busted two big greenhouses down.
Oh my God.
Now they had two. And they were really proud that they were able to find these two greenhouses.
Yeah.
I was flying out of my chair when I saw that. I was like, what are you guys doing? Why don't you come up here and we'll show you thousands?
Well, honestly, I've flown over them three or four different times anyway, taken video, lots of still photos.
And just ballpark. Number of greenhouses?
I don't know. At one point, there were like 5,000 of them.
Yeah.
Stretching for miles.
It's not like you can hide those.
You kind of can from the ground. It's interesting. It looks very different from the ground than it does from the air. And I get that. But bottom line is they're traveling on the roadways. They're not traveling by air. They're not being teleported into other states. They're going by truck.
I think the federal government has some kind of aircraft that they could probably fly over and see where they are and then go get them.
We could get into that on a different day, but it would have to be a major military operation. It's a little harder to roll that up than people would think.
Well, they've gotten so out of control. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people.
So Dr. Trump, Bill and I were big crime fighters. So we're headed up to Susanville, so east of Redding. We're headed up there on just a two-lane highway. And there's a rider truck in front of us with a dirty minivan in front and a dirty minivan in back. And it's like, wow, that thing looks overloaded. So we figure, somebody's moving or something and loaded their truck wrong. And I was like, wait a second.
Wait.
Everybody's passing except the dirty minivans. They stayed where they were. We were five or six cars back. And it's like, I'll bet you money those are the guards for the dope that's in that big rider truck.
Yep.
So we waited and finally we were the car behind the last dirty minivan. And as we go by, sure enough, big, giant, scary cartel-looking guys in there. They were the guards for it.
Yep.
So as we went through Susanville, we pulled in to go pick up some lamb at the butcher shop and walked in there. And who was standing there? The sheriff. Score. We said, hey, like 20 minutes behind us, there's two dirty minivans and a rider truck coming through with a zillion pounds of dope.
I don't think they're hauling furniture.
That was a few years ago, so... See, everyone can be a crime fighter. Let that inspire you. Back to our guest.
Well, so now that we've heard the great story on how many projects our government tax dollars have paid for, again, 11,000.
Oh, yes.
For marijuana or cannabis at a cost of $4.7 billion. So the next time you guys talk to Donald Trump, please remind him of that fact, okay? Let's also point out something else. There are two FDA-approved distinct phytocannabinoids that have been FDA-approved. Remember, Delta-9 THC, dronabinol, marinol, which doesn't use you very much, was approved back in 1985. I used it on some cancer patients, found it not to be very effective as an antiemetic, meaning nausea and vomiting. We've gotten much better medication since then that don't have people seeing dancing elephants, as the first woman that I gave it to told me she was seeing. And CBD got approved in 2018. Cannabidiol also got approved, again, by the Food and Drug Administration after having undergone the rigorous scientific studies that I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Marijuana has undergone these studies and have yet to receive one, not one FDA-approved indication. So let's talk about, you know, something called PubMed, which is the National Library of Medicine, which is also under the National Center for Biotechnology Information. It contains biomedical literature from Medline, life science journals, and online books, okay? And do the fun search called Medical Marijuana, and let's see how many articles have been written that can be found on PubMed regarding medical marijuana. And so this goes back to 1945, that there was one article in 1945. And as the decades went along, prior to 2000, there was a maximum of about 80 in 1998 studies on medical marijuana. So it was under 100 articles per year prior to 2000. And then we know what happened, you know, here in California in 1996, right? And so the fraud started coming out of medical marijuana. And so in 2001 to 2012, prior to the first states legalizing it for recreational use, the number of studies doubled per year. And so they went up to about 185 per year, okay? Studies being written in PubMed on medical marijuana. And so in 2013, which was after the year after the first states got approved, Colorado and Washington, there were 254, okay, articles, and that it peaked in 2019 at 945 reports, okay? So again, if we're lying and saying that we can't study it and can't write papers on it, well, there's proof that you can.
Yeah.
As a CS1 substance. And that it peaked in 2019. Now, what I find really interesting about 2019 is we had a former senator named Feinstein and another senator who's still around named Cornyn that were pushing this lie that we need to have more readily available marijuana to be able to do the research. And the little hang up is that they had to get it out of the federal facility in Mississippi. And Mississippi has the Mississippi labs, which were creating the federal supply of marijuana, which was used in these studies that supposedly weren't being done, but really were, as I gave you the numbers of them. And they were getting it out of Mississippi labs. Okay? So in 2019, they approved this bill to increase and make it easier to be able to create marijuana, because the marijuana industry, right, is making this marijuana. But they can't be used in the studies because, as you guys have already pointed out, it contains heavy metals, pesticides, and what percentage is it, and all that type of fun stuff. And so they always had to get the study drug out of the Mississippi lab. So they said, look, we're going to allow you guys to grow, but you have to follow all the rules of the Mississippi lab. And so they approved the monies to do this. And you want to know what happened to the number of studies after 2019? They all went down.
I was going to say they all went away.
They didn't go up. We would have thought that, oh boy, now we've got more more places making it, and we're going to have more studies. No, it peaked in 2019. And so that was 945, as I said. These are the number of reports. In PubMed, then it went down to 919 in 2020. 2021 went down to 874. 2022 went down to 798. 2023 went down to 674. Hmm. A drop by a third. Went from 900 to 600. Now 2024 went back up to 795 and 2025 is 779. But that's below 945, isn't it? 779 for last year.
Mm-hmm.
So being that we made it more readily available for they could do their, you know, grow it and be able to use it from those facilities, is that happening? The number of reports is going down. You know why?
Oops.
Because we got it recreational. We don't need to be doing studies.
We need to do studies.
That was just another lie that we've caught them in, right? That, oh, we can't do the studies because we can't get it from... No. Now you have the ability to grow it. You just aren't doing it because it's too onerous. All the regulatory requirements that making medicinal marijuana requires, using that medicinal marijuana is going down. The studies of reports of medicinal marijuana are going down. Maybe it also has something to do with all those nasty adverse effects that are showing up.
Yeah, talk about that. I mean, the story I saw here a couple of weeks ago, I can't remember who the doctor was they had on there, but was pretty vehement about how bad the effects are and what's happening to the young folks that are partaking in marijuana. I mean, the psychosis and the paranoia and all the bad things.
Yeah, cannabis use disorder is climbing. That's when you're continuing to use a substance, even though you know it's bad for you. Again, those numbers are climbing. Again, we know it affects smoking. It's not good for you.
No.
Right? I just saw a report yesterday. What's the best thing you can do, you know, health-wise? And it's don't smoke. And mm-hmm. that goes for nicotine, tobacco, or cannabis.
Right.
Hello. You know, this is, you don't smoke. I mean, it affects your heart, your lungs, your immune system, a whole host of things. It's
sure.
not good for you. And this one affects your mind really bad.
And the number of people that are taking it or are smoking it has gone, it's skyrocketed.
It's going up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I'd like to do now, too, is kind of talk about this fraudulent document that was created by Health and Human Services. Back in 2024, which kind of prompted me into volunteering myself to go speak to the DEA judge when they were considering moving it from a CS1 to a CS3. I don't know, do you guys want to take a break now? And then I can get into, there's 8 factors the Health and Human Service Secretary and the Attorney General must consider for scheduling a substance, and I'll roll through those 8 and then talk about the 5-part test for designating a drug as a medicine and how they fraudulently generated this report to fit these criteria.
Okay, yeah, let's take an early break and then we'll hit those. We won't have to get interrupted.
I didn't do the music yet.
Yeah, I don't have any music yet.
Oh, I do. Okay, it's an easy one. I couldn't decide if I want to do science or doctors, so I'll go one of each.
There you go.
All right, we got the doctor song. So this is how it's supposed to work, but the medical marijuana industry has they're not doing any of this that you're going to hear. So we're going to come back, talk some more with Phil Drum. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Went to my family doctor for a pain inside my head. Told him the tinge left me, I was feeling like just about dead. Well, doctor, what can you give me? And could it take one or two? Can you tell me just what it's gonna do? Will it save me from what I'm going through? Will it ease the pain? Will it ease the pain? Will it help to pacify my brain? Blinded by science, I'm on the run. I'm worried about the world that we live in. I'm worried about all the confusion. I wonder about the lies I've been reading. I wonder where this madness is leading. Is this a road going nowhere? With someone leading us somewhere? I can't believe we're here for no reason. There must be something we can't believe in. Blinded by science.
Yeah, we dream about being blinded by science. It's unlikely to happen soon. Okay.
But you can trust the science.
Yeah, of course.
All right, let's go through our list.
Yeah, so let's kind of start with just a step back. Again, we're talking about controlled substance and moving it from a CS1 to a CS3, and who kind of controls that? And the way it's supposed to work is that these 8 factors that Health and Human Science Secretary, HHS Secretary, and I think we all know who that is now, and the Attorney General must consider for scheduling a substance. Okay, so we have to have the science side, and we have to have the DOJ side, okay, if you will. And it's actually the Controlled Substance Act is actually under the Department of Justice. Okay? So if you've got the HHS that's creating something that's saying, yeah, we think it's okay, without any FDA-approved indication, now it kind of got thrown into the lap of the DOJ. And what happened was is that back in 2024 when this happened, the HHS secretary had an undersecretary write up this report. And I'll kind of point out some of the things that were in there that were kind of very, 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 very questionable. It got bounced over to the DOJ side. And they were the last stand about moving it from a 1 to a 3 at that time. And the person that was in charge of the DOJ that was responsible for this said, okay, we have to have a judicial review of this, this information, and that's where, again, people could volunteer in to kind of point out the issues of what was being recommended here to the judge. And what happened was the judge then kind of moved the date as to when they were going to discuss it. They were going to originally discuss it in January 2025, and then it got moved to January 20th. And I said, oh, that's it. It's not going to move forward with the Biden administration now, because Trump is coming into office, and this is all going to go down the toilet. And it did. Okay? Because everything that the Biden administration wanted to do was stopped. Okay? So, therefore, what it came out in 2024 got stopped in 2025 because of a new administration. Now, the scary part is now you're hearing it kind of being revoiced again. Again, I don't know if this is ultimately going to come forward with moving it from a 1 to a 3, but you've heard the support for this. So here's the 8 factors the HHS secretary and the attorney general, the DOJ side, must consider for scheduling a substance. 1, the drug actual or relative potential for abuse, scientific evidence of its pharmacologic effect, the state of current scientific knowledge regarding the drug or other substance, its history and current pattern of abuse, the scope, duration, and significance of abuse, what, if any, risk there is to the public health, its psychic or physiological dependence liability, and whether the substance is an immediate precursor of a substance already controlled. Okay? So that's dealing with the controlled substance side. There is a 5-part test for designating a drug as a medicine. And since 1992, the DEA, Drug Enforcement Agency, has determined that a drug has a currently accepted medical use only if the FDA has approved the drug for marketing. As we know, marijuana and or cannabis, whatever you want to call it, doesn't have that, right? There's no FDA approval for it. Because, again, remember, marijuana or cannabis is over 100 different cannabinoids. Over 100 different cannabinoids. And the marijuana industry wants you to believe that they're all very important. So what I would ask them to tell me is, we know what they are, what the pharmacokinetics and absorption and the dose is for 2 of them, Delta-9 THC and CBD. What about the other 100 plus? I want to know about number 98. What's the dose of number 98? What are the drug-drug interactions for cannabinoid number 67? What's the potential pregnancy risk with cannabinoid number 55? All of these things would be in a package insert that I would receive as a pharmacist with following the FDA approval. Nothing of which we have.
Right.
We don't have the 100 plus cannabinoids identified. But again, the marijuana industry wants you to know that, oh, you know, that dronabinol, that's crap. It doesn't work. It's only Delta-9 THC. We really need the whole product to get that whole effect. Kind of sounds suspicious to you?
Yes.
And so, again, they want the whole product. They don't want dronabinol. They don't want CBD, which have already been FDA approved. So, you need, it has to have FDA approval. and it's not. Or meets the five-part test that tracks with core standards developed under the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. So what are those five parts? The drug's chemistry must be known and reproducible, number one. All right, so now it's reproducible. So we need to have the same amount of cannabinoid 67 in all the products. The same amount of cannabinoid 98 in the products. We need to know the chemistry. How does it get absorbed? How does it get distributed? How does it get eliminated for each of those over 100 cannabinoids? There must be adequate safety studies. Don't have them yet. There must be adequate and well-controlled studies providing efficacy or proving efficacy that it works. The drug must be accepted by qualified experts. And number five, the scientific evidence must be widely available. Okay, so those five things. And so their claim is that, you know, we just need to approve it. And here's the, cannabis has a low potential for abuse compared with other substances. Right? You hear them say that. This is not heroin. Oh my God. You know, it's not morphine, which is a CS2. You know, it's on the level of a Tyco number 3. Okay, we'll give you that. Originally, they didn't even want it to be a controlled substance. There's an arm of these people that think that it shouldn't be a controlled substance at all.
Oh, no, because it's all natural.
Know it is addictive. Yeah. It is addictive, and you do go through withdrawal symptoms. It just takes longer because it's a fat-soluble molecule, and fat-soluble molecules take longer to leave your body. But it's still in your body. And, again, as we mentioned before, 60% of your brain is fat, fatty tissue. So guess where it's residing? In your brain.
Which explains the psychosis and...
Yep. And so, again, when they say, well, you know, it's coming out, my favorite is what they want to say, it's coming out in my urine, and it's a non-psychoactive metabolite, okay, the carboxy metabolite. It's not psychoactive. Well, what they fail to acknowledge is that the other main metabolite coming out of your urine is the hydroxy, and the hydroxy metabolite is actually more psychotropic than delta-9 THC is. So we can forget that the hydroxy is more psychotropic than the parent compound and focus on, well, you can't be testing for the carboxy in my urine because that's not psychoactive. Okay, well, then explain to me how you create that THC backbone molecule, because your body does not have that. Your body has what's called anandamide. No, it's nowhere close to THC. And we actually have anandamide receptors, but they've called them, unfortunately, cannabinoid receptors because they knew the molecule of THC before we found the anandamide in the body in the 1990s. And so the bottom line is you don't make carboxy THC without having THC in the body. Get it?
Right.
Mm. And so if carboxy is still coming out in the urine a week later, that means you still have THC in your body. And as we just mentioned, guess where it is? It's in your brain. It's in your brain and slowly leaching out of your brain. So again, they want to claim that it has a low abuse potential. Well, they're kind of neglecting that we're having some emerging trends in cannabis use, and a high prevalence of cannabis use disorder is now occurring in heavy or long-term users. And the proportion of individuals with cannabis use disorder related to the effective comparator substance. They're not comparing it to other substances. We love to talk about, you know, alcohol, right? Let's compare it to alcohol. Okay, so far more people drank alcohol in the past month. About 137 million people had, you know, tasted alcohol, compared to now maybe 42 million using cannabis in the last month. But that has gone up dramatically, right? We know that in 1999 to 2022, the rate of rise of cannabis use has gone up quite a bit, whereas daily or near-daily alcohol users back in 1992 were about 8.9 million people. Cannabis users were like about 0.9 million. When they repeated the study in 2022, daily or near daily users of cannabis is now 17 million.
strong.
Oh, wow.
So it went from 1 million to 17, and alcohol is at 14.7.
And that's as of 2022.
Correct. And we know that there's been somebody out there, and I think we can be suspicious as to who's been helping promote a lot of the how bad alcohol is information.
Yeah.
And it's been swinging younger generations then into using marijuana. And in 2022, the past month, cannabis users were 7.4 times more likely to report daily use, 28.2%, than alcohol consumers at 3.8%. We're talking daily use. So, again, cannabis use among adolescents and young adults is about 16.5%, is converging with alcohol use disorder at 16.4%. And, again, we have the DSM-5 criteria for continued use. Again, this is cannabis use disorder, is you continue to use despite physiologic or psychologic problems, was many times more higher among those with cannabis use disorder at 31.9%. compared with disorders of alcohol use at 5.7. So again, that they're continuing to use it despite them having mental problems. Let's compare that to prescription opioid use, 7.3, cocaine use, 9.7. So again, nationally, the data suggests that as many as 30% of those who use cannabis may develop cannabis use disorder. 30%.
Wow.
Minors developing cannabis use disorder is at twice the rate of adults.
Yes.
So let's think about that, that when we want to talk about has a low abuse potential and needs to be a CS3, let's look at that. Let's look at the impairment of motor vehicles and driving traffic fatalities involving marijuana, how they marijuana used to be around 9% of fatal crashes. Back in 2000, and now it's around 21% in 2018 and higher. And we have poly drug use, now that's really, really increasing. And so again, we have to, you know, we have all these calls into poison control centers that they just want to ignore. Children, you know, having this use, you know, but because the parents are leaving their gummies around and they think it's candy. You know, these types of things happening. I talked about, you know, cannabis currently has an accepted medical use in treatment of the United States. They want to make that claim. Again, only 2% of providers are recommending this. 2%. And when they looked at it, you know, what was the degree for these people? You know, you do recognize you can have other people that can prescribe medication now, right? Beyond an MD, right? We have nurse practitioners, physician assistants.
Oh, yeah.
Nurses now can recommend, but they found that 53% are MDs. So 47% are not medical doctors that are recommending cannabis. Okay? Again, we also know that if they want to call it medicine, as you pointed out, what's the dose? What's the frequency? What's the composition? Is this going to be a rectal suppository of cannabis, a vaginal insert of cannabis?
We should make it be that, and everybody would stop using it. Well,
And the reality is when you do that, we have to know, again, what's the dose? How does it get eliminated? What's the frequency?
Sure.
What's the, you know, for an indication, you know, when was the last time you were told, here, just go pick up this medication and figure out what the dose is?
Right. Right.
The doctor tells you, you take one of these tablets that's 12.5 milligrams once a day or twice a day. You know, whatever. It's not like, oh, go talk to the bedtender and he'll figure it out for you. You know, we find that they're not warning. We find that they're giving it to pregnant women, which is a major no-no.
Yeah.
You know, I don't give foxglove to a patient for digoxin. I don't pull up a plant and hand it to them and say, here you go, here's your antiarrhythmic drug. You know, so there's huge problems with them trying to pretend that a plant is medicine. Let's find out what's the dose, what's the frequency. What are the drug-drug interactions? When's the last time the bedtenders told you about that? You know, and again, remember, if you're made a CS3 substance, that bedtender gets to look and see all the other drugs, you know, the controlled substances that you're on. Because he's going to have to look at that prescription drug monitoring profile. And now we get to find out who's recommending this. Remember, it's a recommendation. It's not a prescription.
Well, no, but it still, I would think, makes them somewhat liable for any negative consequences if they give that.
Yeah, what is the liability on all? What, you have huge liability.
That's why they did that. That's why they did that. That they're not. It's just merely. It's a mere recommendation. You don't have to take that. I get it.
Yeah, we didn't tell them to take it. We just, you know, we.
And they're not required to inform the patient of risks or adverse effects. They're not required to do that, like they are with medication. Right? When we give the medication out, we got that list of all the side effects. They fight every time we try to put any mental health disorder has to be put on, you know, their product. They fight tooth and nail to not allow that. They don't want to put that impairs driving. They don't want to tell you how long the driving impairment is, hours, and that you can't identify if you're unable to be in, that you're impaired. They tested this in simulated driving, and they think they're safe to drive after 30 minutes, and 90 minutes later, 3 hours later, they're still impaired, mm-hmm. and they think they're okay to drive.
Now,
their ability to determine their impairment, they've proven multiple times in scientific studies they can't do it.
Yeah.
They can't tell their own impairment.
So if they reschedule it, does that change the liability issue?
It's still a recommendation.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you go to your doctor and you get a recommendation.
Doomed.
Yeah.
Boys, we have to run away. We have 30
All
seconds.
Right.
Phil Drum, thanks a million zillion.
Oh, thank you.
Everything is linked.
Very, very informative.
At We the People Radio. Welcome to the Twilight Zone.